Hey everybody, it's Eric, and thanks for checking out another HatcherCast episode. And today it is Seth, myself, and Roy running the panel. Chris is not with us today. He's a big pansy and had to go to bed early.
Yeah, so. He had to go to sleep.
Yeah.
As the rest, so we do have an empty chair. I will say I miss having you over on this side, Seth, but you do.
This mic smells. I don't like being over here.
It's because Chris's spittle is all over it.
Chris's butt imprints in this chair just doesn't fit right.
Yeah.
I will say the lighting on that side of the room is better.
Yeah.
It works your complexion better.
Mm, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Looks clean.
Yeah, it looks good.
Sure the audience appreciates it.
Yeah, I bet they do. So, guys, thanks for checking out this episode. If you have not already, make sure you subscribe to this. If you're watching it on YouTube, subscribe and hit the like button and comment. If you're watching this on Spotify, make sure you follow the channel. It's going to be a special one today because we have some interesting topics we want to talk about. And one of them is involving a number I can't even write down on a piece of paper.
What might that number be?
$95 billion is going to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan in an aid package.
How much?
$95 billion.
$95 billion.
Can you actually write $95 billion?
I have a plan.
The number?
I have a plan. Yeah. High school education. So no. I can barely work my way through an episode of talking.
So. I'm the world's worst Asian. Seth, it's all on your shoulders.
Yeah, 95 followed by 90s.
That's a lot. Too many to think about. Yeah. So let's see. We got Reuters pulled up here. Washington, the center of hell. I mean, Washington and D.C.
Speaking of demons.
Yeah. The U.S. House of Representatives on Saturday, with a broad bipartisan support, passed a $95 billion legislative package providing security assistance to Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and our southern border. Actually, not. Just kidding. Over bitter objections from Republican hardliners. The legislation now proceeds to the Democratic Majority Senate, which are probably owned by the military-industrial complex, which passed a similar measure more than 2 months ago. U.S. leaders from top Senate Republican Mitch McConnell have been urging embattled Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson to bring it up for a vote. I wonder how many of these guys are going to be putting so much stock into Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, all of L3, how many of those guys are going to be dumping stock into or buying up their stock now?
They already have, actually. A report just came out that I want to say that it was up over 14% in a lot of these portfolios. Hmm. So just within recent months, I mean.
It's so predictable now.
It is. It's at the point right now. So this bill right now, the way that they're divvying it up, it's 60 billion, almost 61 billion to go to Ukraine, 23 billion to replenish U.S. stocks of weapons and facilities, 26 billion for Israel, 9.1 billion for humanitarian needs, and 8.12 billion for the Taiwan package. And now, when it comes to 23 billion replenishing weapons and stocks in U.S. armories, some of that $60 billion that's going to Ukraine is also going to still go back to replenish stocks. That's not just also $60 billion that's going to the front line. That is $60 billion going to bureaucrats over there. It's paying their pensions. Mm-hmm. It's paying their retirements. It's paying medical bills, keeping the lights on, bringing in more commerce. Like, it's to keep that country running. And what's crazy is I follow a lot of the frontline battle reports and an ongoing battle map. And Russia is moving steadily along at a very quick pace. And in fact, the reason for it is because Russia has air superiority right now. Mm-hmm. Like, they have there's not enough air defense weapons by the Ukrainians to be able to stop that air support. And so they're getting hit with Fab 1500 kilogram bombs, like massive bombs. They're getting hit with concussion thermobaric bombs. They're getting hit with rockets from helicopters, where before, if you guys saw the videos where the rockets would shoot the rockets in the air.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what they would do to get away from air defense. Now they're actually doing direct attack rockets. And so they have a lot of air superiority, and the Russians, I've said this, you guys have heard me say it for a long time. Russians throughout history have figured out a way. Now, they do it with blood. Mm-hmm. They buy their strategy and they buy their knowledge with blood, but they learn very fast. And the Ukrainians are just not able to keep up because they don't have the infrastructure support. They don't have the arms, the equipment, all that stuff to stop it. Whereas they're relying on us and our vote to go through mm-hmm. on this insane, treacherous bill. Whereas Russia is doing everything in-house.
Which is, it's just more blood.
It's more blood.
Yeah, it's just more blood.
All I can say is I'm just glad we don't need the money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because what is it?
Yeah. Well, what's crazy is they're not going to, it's not $60 billion we have.
No.
It's $60 billion they're going to print, which is going to mm-hmm. worsen the inflation. So.
Yep. It's coming from nowhere whatsoever. So it's, what do you even say about it?
I don't know.
Like what more is there to talk about when it comes to this? What is the end? What is the end? What's the end goal?
That's what I've always said. I'm like, I don't know the reason why. Other than it's as many people trying to take as much gold off that Titanic before they get in a lifeboat and everybody else drowns. Like, that's what it feels like to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like just stripping the gold off the Titanic.
So what is the fix? How do we stop? How does it stop?
A lot of stuff I can't say on YouTube, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think... Well, I mean, to kind of go back to Russian tactics a little bit, to kind of talk about something that makes sense. Besides
that's probably the only thing that makes sense. About
yeah,
this
some battlefield improvisation that I've been seeing is really interesting. There was an X video recently where it showed it looked like a moving house. It looked like the Russians built a shed on a truck, and what they did is they literally fabricated. Like a thin sheet metal that hovered. It was off of this tank. Mm-hmm. It looked like a house on a tank track. And there you could see like the gun sticking out. It looked ridiculous. It looked like a child's play toy that you made in third grade out of paper mache or construction paper. And literally it went right up through the Ukrainian lines because they couldn't hit their drones on it.
Really?
Because a drone was exploding on the thin sheet metal outside. It was like a moving shed. So the drones would hit that, it would explode, and the armor underneath was perfectly fine. And they were literally able to drive right up to the Ukrainian.
Was it a tank underneath it?
Yeah. Dude, it was gnarly looking.
They just covered a tank, basically, in an aluminum shed.
Yeah, with an aluminum shed.
Galvanized shed or whatever.
Yes.
It's pretty genius.
Yeah. It was genius. And people were making fun of them, but they literally drove all the way up to the line. They dropped off their troops and drove all the way back. Like almost like without even any effort of like being stopped.
Hmm. So simple to just basically just stop what the only attack that seems to be the only attack that the Ukrainians have right now is drones, right?
Yeah. So they're relying.
That's the only thing that they have to rely on.
Yeah. They're relying a lot on drones, and then they're also relying a lot on artillery that is very focused, because even their artillery, they're running out of it. Mm-hmm. So like some other interesting things, which I'm looking up right now, there was a robot that actually got destroyed by a Ukrainian drone that was had a machine gun on it, and it was literally like an RC car, but mm-hmm. it was on a tank, like a small tank track, and it had like an RPG on it and a machine gun, and it was just like a ground UAV, like a ground drone.
I think the ATF uses those.
Yeah.
yeah. I'm trying to think about...
They're probably getting it off of Amazon.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know. Like, what do you do?
Well, I mean, just kind
of buy a Roomba, a Glock, and a Glock switch. Mm-hmm. All off of Amazon.
Actually, talking about Glock switch, for us here in our area, here in the Plant City area, there was just somebody arrested recently for dealing in Glock switches.
Can you tell that story?
I don't know the entire story, but ATF did raid them right here in the Plant City area. So they have not released a name as far as I know, but kind of curious of who it is, because I kind of have an idea maybe who it might be.
Mm. Really?
So, yeah. So good old Glock switches.
It's not where I bought my 10 Glock switches.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a joke, ATF.
Yeah.
That was a joke, ATF.
Just kidding. So,
yeah, just kidding. Yeah. I mean, how many Glock switches are in Detroit,
circulation,
Chicago,
yeah,
and all over the place?
It sounds like a war zone over there.
It does. Dude, it sounds like a war zone sometimes if you just drive through pretty much almost any inner city.
Yeah.
It sounds like a war zone. So,
I mean, we have a couple buddies at Plant City, and have they been saying there's been a significant increase in crime? I know there's been a lot of a lot more illegals have been coming into Florida. I'm curious if what the stats are as far as like petty crimes, like robbery and theft and stuff like that.
Honestly, I haven't really paid attention to it a whole lot outside of, you know, just naturally staying prepared on your own.
Yeah.
You know,
I think we're on the cusp here in Florida.
Yeah.
In most places. What I have noticed is an uptick in scrappers.
Mm-hmm.
So I've noticed a lot more traffic and people scrapping or trying to refurbish trash, you know. Find a kid's playhouse that someone's thrown out, and then they clean it up and sell it on Facebook Marketplace. Yeah. Those days, I mean, I haven't seen that since the crash of 2008.
Yeah, around 2008, 2009, you started seeing that in 2010.
And then everything was so cheap and plentiful that that kind of went out the window. You know, people were like, I'll just buy it new. Now there's a market.
Do you think that part of that has to do with, I know this is off the subject of Ukraine, but do you think part of that has to do with the lack of supplies of things due to COVID? Like for so long, like we were out of things and people started taking things and like, because Facebook Marketplace, obviously, it's you know, it's been a thing, but it really blew up as far as a way of making income. And now you have people that are making entire amounts of income. Via through Facebook Marketplace and repurposing and reselling, refurbishing, refinishing type things like that. Like,
well, and for the consumer as well, because let's face it, we're a nation of consumers.
Yes. Yeah.
And we have all gotten used to the good times where you just buy whatever you want, whenever you want. And now people are feeling that pressure, less consuming going on, but people still want to consume. So now with Facebook Marketplace, they can still do that at a lower price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. I shop Facebook Marketplace quite often, looking to see what's out there for sale. And you know, currently looking, we have a dirt bike project, you know, or off-road dirt bike project that we're working on for us here as far as, you know, means of transportation and stuff like that. So I've been shopping Facebook Marketplace a lot recently, and it's crazy the amount of different types of stuff, like you were saying, though, how, like, it almost seems like I'll hit certain people's, you know, listings and how much they have for sale, and in that, how much of that has now become a huge market, like repurposing, recycling, and refurbishing all that. So,
and some of the stuff's still not cheap. I mean,
no, it's not. Well, that's what I'm wondering is due to, you know, during COVID, the shortage of supply, the inability to get things, and we are consumers at the end of the day. Even the ones that don't have money, you're still wanting to buy things.
Mm-hmm.
You're still wanting to purchase things. Even if you don't have the money to buy it, you're still wanting to buy things. So
Dollar Tree couldn't hold out. Yeah. Everything's $1.25 at least. And last time I was in there, there was a surprising number of products that were $5 or more in there. Mm-hmm. I was like, you might as well be a Dollar General.
Hey, wait, there is products in the dollar store that's $5 or more?
Mm-hmm. And the Dollar Tree.
What?
Which this, that used to be their whole thing.
It's only
was,
a dollar.
Everything was a dollar.
Yep.
You would not find anything in there, you know.
Yeah, my wife would go there to specifically look for stuff for like treasure box at school. She's a school teacher, so, you know, look for different types of things like that. Now she's just pulling stuff like that we bought for the kids over the year that they never opened.
Yeah.
Because it's so expensive. Like, she would go to the Dollar
Tree. Did you know the Dollar Tree sells guns?
Do they?
Yeah.
What?
I just bought a J-frame for Boswell there. It was like a little, it was a cap gun. They didn't sell the caps, though. Caps weren't included, and they didn't sell the caps, but they sold the little J-frame.
I'm honestly surprised that any store actually still sells the cap guns like that. Yeah. So.
Walmart, they will sell, I don't know if you've ever seen it, they sell a pistol. It's like neon green and orange. But it comes with like a knockoff sidecar.
Yeah, actually, we got that for Joey, and she thought it was super cool.
Yeah.
I think T-Rex are, like, Lucas actually posted a picture of it. He's like, oh, nice, they're knocking off the sidecar.
Yeah. So everyone's knocked off the sidecar.
Sometimes for the price of, like, for June and Gabe, I literally just bought them. Like, I was like, I'll just buy you guys an actual holster and, like, gun belt. Like, I bought them and just let them play with that stuff.
Yeah, that's legit. Yeah, that's something. Actually, you brought up the. So what'd you think about that tank?
Yeah, dude.
Looks like a house on
wheels.
It's
basically a shed.
Yeah.
Around a tank.
Yeah, I'm going to build a tiny home.
Yeah, I'm going to be. That's what it looked like. It actually looked like a mobile tiny home.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's what it goes to show, like, how innovative people can be when things are going, you know, just on the battlefield. It's just gnarly. But yeah, going back to.
That's very primitive almost to a certain extent.
It
it's
is.
Like, it's like, who thought of that? Like, was. I can't believe anyone almost in charge thinks of that.
Yeah.
That's just a bunch of dudes, a platoon out there, It's like, hey, we got to get to there.
Yeah. Let's think of something to figure. Yeah. That's a good idea, Ferry, that's in the trenches. That's like,
listen,
let's try it.
The Russians do not get enough credit for how creative they are.
They are very creative.
Remember, pre all of this, there are a lot of YouTube channels of Russians that would come up with the craziest contraptions and you know, do it yourself things. It's pretty neat. Yeah,
they did have
what was that channel? It was like a DIY like Russian channel.
Yeah, I don't know. YouTube. It was, but they taught you how to like make a string or whatever out of 2 liter bottles or whatever.
I could waste waste hours just watching random silly stupid stuff like that. Yeah.
That's their tactic.
That is their tactic.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they had an anti-drone thing that they stuck that they usually have on the ground, and they just stuck it on the top of the tank. And so it would drive around, and drones couldn't hit it because there was an anti-drone thing that was preventing drones from going to it. So it's just like rolling along.
It's crazy.
What was it, like some type of scrambler?
Yeah, it was just like so they have these drone there. It's a new thing where essentially all drones are – they're controlled by this like radio frequency.
Right.
So it's just to scramble that frequency. And what it does is it makes you lose connection. Now there are some scramblers that actually will overtake the connection and then they will steal your drone and use their controller to fly it back to where they want it. But now there's even videos of DJI drone battles where drones are fighting drones in the air. And it was nothing super crazy. What's crazy about it is there was a DJI drone with a net, and it sees a Ukrainian drone flying around with a little grenade, and it flies over top and drops the net onto the drone, dude. And the net gets caught in propellers, and it crashes.
The silliest thing about this is 5 years from now, it's going to be a video game. Yeah. It's going to be drone simulator dogfights or something available on Xbox Live.
That basically has already existed, like in the U.S., community
drone races,
like drone races and drone like fighting and like robot fighting and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
like
So Throw Flame. Have you heard of that? Throw Flame. So we did the one where we did the exothermic.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The flamethrower.
Yeah.
There's another company called Throw Flame. They make a flamethrower. They just released a robot dog, and you know those robot looking dogs.
Yeah.
It has a flamethrower on its back, and you can buy it for $9,000. But it was cool as they were like, "Hey, this is available for law enforcement, military or civilians," and I was like,
"Well, at least they made it."
So when are we buying?
Dude, it was
ATF,
cool.
If you want to come after my dog, you can come after that dog. Let's see how it works out.
Oh man,
yeah. Speaking of the ATF, I would love to. So we recently just did some stuff, right? And the turnaround time is so fast.
Oh, you mean we funded the ATF?
Yeah. Well. I was just inquiring about somebody else who did it.
No, we funded it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
So, yeah. So. But why do you think the turnaround time is that fast? The new norm?
Supposedly it's a new norm. It was supposed to be when e-file rolled out. That was the initial plan. A 30 to 90 day type turnaround.
Yeah.
With increasing or as far as what the... with shrinking those times, making those times significantly faster. Okay. So it came out and you were getting tons of that, 30 days. And then you started getting some of those sub 30 days because there wasn't a whole lot of dealers that were technically set up at that particular point in time to do e-file for the fact of that you had to do the electronic fingerprints, do the EFT files. Okay. So there wasn't a ton of dealers unless you had a silencer shop kiosk for the most part. You weren't necessarily set up yet to do do e-file, so the initial push on it was rolling stuff back to people relatively pretty quick. Well, the word got out on how fast that was, and then I do believe when e-file first rolled out in that month of October, there was more suppressors that were sold in that month than there was in the entire prior year.
Wow,
e-file's been out what, 2 years now?
About 2 years, yeah. So there was more suppressors sold in that one month, basically, than the prior entire year. So that just flooded the whole e-file network. And that was about the same time that I got set up to do e-file also. And everyone's coming in. They're like, oh, man, my buddy just got a suppressor back in like 20 days or 30 days or 60 days or something like that. And I'm like, man, just like realistically at the end of the day, anticipate still 6 months.
Yeah.
That's what it turned it up to be, and really, really quick.
Mm.
And then part of their flaw in their system that they had is when they run your background's good for 30 days. Okay, so they would have it, you know, an agency run your background, or they had this, you know, contracted agency or subcontractors running background, stuff like that. Well, they would get the backgrounds back, but then they had so many of these here that they didn't have enough people to actually process the forms within that 30 days. Mm. So now your background's not good. So now they got to send out and do another background.
Yeah.
So delaying the entire process. Then they had the whole thing where somehow or another, there was a whole bunch of suppressors that were approved without even necessarily doing backgrounds on them. So
nice.
That delayed it even more. So originally the initial push of eFile was supposed to be fast, and I think now they're just getting caught up.
I don't know if this is the case for the ATF. I know a lot of the other departments of the government, a lot of the people who actually do work are mm-hmm. actually contractors.
Yes.
So you have you have your feds, and then you have your contractors.
Right.
It could also be, depending on how long a contractor is, and if they, depending on when they had them in to implement that system, they might have had to wait for another contractor to come in
mm-hmm.
and be like, hey, you know, you guys could do this, and it would be way faster.
Yeah.
Because those guys don't care about how long it takes. They go in, clock mm-hmm. in, do their job. This is how it is. Nobody is trying to innovate, and it's so hard for anybody in the government to innovate anyways. Between things have to go up the chain. Contractors, on the other hand, if they tell them, yeah, this is how you do it, it's that's what they get paid for. So mm-hmm. if they implement a whole new system, they just use that system.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that's what ended up happening. Mm-hmm. They just got somebody who understood better how the system would work.
The entire push for eFile was based on the firearms industry. Like, I mean, you know, the big players in the suppressor world were the ones that were, you know, behind backing and helping develop and push this along as far as the eFile. The other problem that you had with the initial delay, why it was still taking so long, is you still had so many paper files that were right out there. So you had all of those paper files. How many other people that you have working up there in Virginia or working, you know, from home, because there's obviously plenty that are probably working from home. There's only so many of them. You still have paper files that got to process. Then you have all the e-files that are coming in on top of them. Then you had everybody that decided to take their free registration, a.k.a. nothing is ever free, from the government. So had to take their free registration due to the pistol brace. Like, so you had all that kind of stuff where ATF's obviously constantly meddling. And
what a sham.
Yeah,
what a sham.
Yeah, exactly. And it's still what the part that makes me sick, though, about every bit of it. And we're guilty of it ourselves, is that we get excited about quick turnaround times on buying something that shouldn't even be regulated.
Yes.
And we get excited about it. The entire community, as far as gun owners, get excited. Oh, guess what? It only takes 24 hours? Yeah.
Takes 2 days, so tyranny's totally fine.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly. It took less than 20.
The tyranny wasn't inconvenient, so right. I'll accept it.
That's only when we complain. It seems like that's really when the masses of the community gets behind it. It's when it's inconvenient. And
that's anything.
Correct.
That's anything.
Yeah.
When it becomes...
Nobody complains about taxes when they have enough money to do what they want to do.
When it's convenient, then it's like, oh, okay, whatever. I'll just pay my... Let's just go ahead and do it. And we're guilty of it, too, at the end of the day. I mean, we just did it. It took 17 hours or 16 hours to approve.
I thought it was spam.
Yeah.
Not anymore. No. I'll put it on record. IRS, you're not receiving a dime from my household.
So here's what I think about the fast turnaround time is I've been watching a lot of the Armed Scholar, and something that's going up right now is there's multiple lawsuits that are happening between different parties and the ATF.
Yeah.
And so right now the ATF is scrambling. And from what I'm seeing from the Armed Scholar, if you guys go check out their YouTube channel, it's really informative. But like the ATF is losing on a lot of the grounds. And that's why the fast turnaround times, I think, in my opinion, are happening, because they're trying to build their case for, hey, this isn't an inconvenience. This, like, we don't have any problems. This system's up and running. Like, trying to entice the general public, or actually I would say the lawmakers, to say like, hey, this isn't a problem, right? And so they're trying to push a faster turnaround to be able to back up their claim in court based off of whatever case they have. Because one of them is the Texas one.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one where if it's made in Texas, a suppressor in Texas, Texans don't need to have it. And, and the ATF says, no, you have to. So now they're looking at the trial, to my knowledge, is essentially that suppressors and SBRs are common use items because the ATF shot themselves in the foot. Pun intended, with the brace thing.
Yes, they did.
And
they
so proved, now
SBRs are common use items.
Exactly. Now lawmakers are like, well, wait, this, you want to outlaw, like, what's the difference? Like,
they
it's already the same
thing.
They
admitted how many millions of people have SBRs.
Correct.
How common that SBRs are.
Yeah. And so.
And how statistically speaking, how small when you're talking about gun crimes that are committed with firearms, how small the percentage of is with a SBR.
Yeah.
Like that percentage. Like gun crimes are committed with
Dracos.
Yeah. Maybe not Dracos, but probably.
Yeah, probably. So, but yeah. I think that's the one thing is I think it's a panic move. They're trying to get everything pushed through right now. Or it's a money grab. They know it's coming. They know that the NFA is going to have a huge hit and then a lot of stuff are going to be taken off of it. And maybe it's a money grab to try and get as much as they can.
They just issued that new ruling on basically banning, in a sense, due to their wording, banning private sale anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which in states that allow private sale and have always, you know, to my knowledge, now if I sell you a pistol, I'm now in the business, you know, and that's...
Yeah, it's all trash. So check this out. Go with this theory. We have COVID as an experience that happened on a micro scale, right?
Yeah.
Now imagine if we have infrastructure that is attacked. We have shipping because now we're no longer doing trade with China. We're no longer doing trade with all these BRICS nations. And all of our food supply starts dwindling down. And then you get people who start buying up all the canned food. They start buying up all the supplies, all the formula, everything. And then they're trying to sell it to you for, you know, 4, 5, 8 times, 10 times the price of what you would normally have to pay for in the store. Stores are sold out of everything.
It sounds like you're describing what's already happening, and the person doing it is the government through inflation.
Well, it's what's going to happen is they're
policies.
It's going to start driving up these types of things that we saw in COVID where people lose their moral values. They go in and try to make an opportunity out of it. And profit off of other people's suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's going to hit a point when that happens where it gets so desperate where that common man who has done things to protect his family, to feed his family, he just breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes off and does crazy stuff. And that's how you start seeing a crumbling of society where these people are just like, hey, man, you want to buy, you know, a pack of toilet paper for $300? And the guy gets... Well, it's like, how about I just murder you, and I will take that toilet paper. Yeah. And that's where things start to fall apart.
My killdozer's almost built.
Yeah, I mean, you're just seeing things where it's like, that is how society starts to fall apart and crumble. We saw a tiny bit of it during COVID, but imagine it when it's not just, a pandemic. It's now, don't even bother going out because there's no food in the grocery store.
I don't know. That's a tough one, because I was going to say, if you're mad now with the things going on, just remember, we were all put through this situation, and ultimately 99% of people complied.
Mm-hmm.
So when Wawa or Publix, oh, you want to shop here? Wear a mask.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, I mean, I was one of those. I held out for, okay, I'm not going to shop there.
Yeah.
Eventually got to a point where, okay, I can't shop anywhere unless I put on this stupid mask.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually it's like, fine, I'll throw on this mask, you know. I'm not happy about it, but... You know, and go in there, you know, rip it, put it up, wear it like a diaper chin and just, you know, snub your nose at people and be like, I've got my mask right here. Wait for somebody. Hey, put it on. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
But it was, we did that. And we all went through that as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, oh, we don't have to wear masks? What changed?
Oh, masks are bad for you again?
Yeah. Part of me, it was like, why aren't we doing this?
So here's my question.
You were willing to call the cops or kick me out of the store, like prevent me from being a customer for what?
So here's my question to you then. Was that experiment by design to see what they could do and how they could push it, or was it just pure idiocracy?
Pure idiocracy.
Yeah.
there's a part of me that wants to believe that it's an experiment, like we are the lab rats,
yeah,
and that they're experimenting with us and testing, you know, testing the food that they feed us into everything. Like there's that large portion of me that wants to believe that it is that. Then there's the part of me that's like, okay, well maybe it's just pure ignorance, pure, you know, negligence, all of that. And then there's the part of me that's just like, it's pure demonic.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
like it's pure evil. It's pure demonic. Everything that they're doing, let's strip away any ability that they have by implementing, you know, these bills like this in play.
They're definitely idiotic because you had people like Nancy Pelosi marching through Chinatown in March, you know, of 2019 or 2020, you know, marching through Chinatown. Oh, come on down to Chinatown. Yeah. It's great, you know, right. And then within 6 months, wear a mask. Everybody wear a mask.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I see from that whole experience is, to me, it absolutely just magnifies the weight of what it means for men like us and men like those who are out there listening to the show who are have their moral values established by Jesus himself. Mm-hmm. Like that is the difference between you get someone who has no moral values other than what the government holds over them and just says, hey, you know, you go to prison if you do that or you can get arrested. They don't have a moral guideline outside what they think is a good moral guideline. And honestly, that's why people are like, ah, that's not my truth. Well, it's because you have no morals. And right. So, but when it comes to Christian men who have a strong moral system because we have the Bible and everything that we have as far as a moral guideline is established by God himself, that is the one thing that would keep any semblance of a society together. That's the one thing that would keep anything from falling apart would be men who are strong enough to stand up and say, that's wrong, I'm not going to do that. And then also going back to, in my opinion, defending the people who can't defend themselves, because it's going to require men who are strong to establish a moral standard to rebuild a rule of law and a society again. Because right now, in my opinion, if there was a complete collapse with the way society is today, it would turn into the purge, like in my opinion.
It would 100% turn into the purge. It's definitely turning into... I mean, you have to look at what, you know, how close was it actually probably becoming to that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, well, you got to think about like...
I mean, with the riots...
How many churches shut down? How many Christians do you know, quote-unquote Christians, that were like, hey, don't... Hey, 6 feet, man, 6 feet. Like,
how many inner cities that were just burned to the ground?
Oh, yeah, during the BLM riots,
And then completely taken over.
Now, that part, I believe, was an experiment.
Yeah.
Of letting happen.
An experiment, but by people that had been already pushed so far. That's the part that makes me wonder if every bit of it's obviously an experiment. Because, okay, we push you, we lock you up in your home, we confine you in your space, you're not able to go to work, you can't earn a living. Meanwhile, obviously, the mega, you know...
But I see, this is... I mean, and it could be just be... That was the primer to start conditioning people to do that.
Yeah.
Because look at what's happening at Columbia right now.
What's happening in Columbia, Seth?
Yeah,
I know, but educate our listeners.
Okay. I don't know, so
so University of Columbia, they're having a huge like pro Hamas rally. All those students and stuff like that. Okay. I mean, they are screaming obscenities, physically abusing, you know, Jewish people or Jewish students, Jewish professors. The college, to my knowledge, actually, I think, kind of put some of the Jewish teachers like on leave, like, yeah, you need to go. It has turned into they're doing online classes now, so there's no more. They've had to shut down that school basically. It's become a zoo. It's a zoo. They have no control over it. It's an exhibition basically. And when you watch a lot of these people, like I have seen some of the crazy Trump supporters or people on the right, when you know. But there is a difference. You can see it in people's eyes, like that crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it a lot in a lot of the people in these crowds.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually scary. Something we were going to talk about. It's called demon possession.
Yes.
Yes, straight up. I mean, so like, that is something that you bring up that is so true. I mean, one thing is that everything is just confusion. Everything is just chaos. Like, you got people who are like, they're pro BLM, pro Antifa, but they're also pro Hamas and pro Palestine. But then you have the elites who support them, the Democrats who support them, or the rhinos, the scumbags in Washington that support their BLM and their Antifa, but they're supporting Israel. Mm-hmm. So there's like, you got all these people, like you got AOC supporting Israel. She actually voted against this Ukraine bill because there is an aid package going to Israel, whereas all of her Democrat buddies were supporting it. So it's like there's so much confusion and back-to-back. I think at the end of the day...
Basically pure ignorance.
Pure money. It goes back to like, oh, well, I have stocks in this. And so it goes to show that when you're saying about like people just look crazy, that straight up, man, is a demonic possession.
It's a magnetism. I don't know. It's on both sides. Mm-hmm. So for as much as a lot of these people are finding each other and it seems they're just gathering together, and it's like, why is there always a crowd of these people available to protest this or burn down this city or do this? But in the same token, and I'm sure you guys have noticed, we have been finding more like-minded Christians.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Coming out of the woodworks. Like, people are proud and ready to stand and be bold for Christ.
I can tell you why.
So this awakening that is happening, at the gym, it's great because it's almost like everybody else is just a background actor, and all the strong Christians, just as soon as you walk in, just make eye contact, and then we talk to each other. You know, we have this guy, he's actually one of the viewers, Rudy. He teaches Thai. What is it?
Okay, yeah.
How to make Thai food.
No. Yeah, he cooks Thai food.
Kickboxing.
Yeah. Muay Thai. Yeah, I didn't want to say Thai kickboxing. Yeah. I'm like that. Yeah. No. I think you have met Rudy. Yeah. I nicknamed him the Grim Reaper. He walks around in the gym with his hoodie on. And he's just cruising through. And he's like 50-something years old, but he doesn't look like it.
Mm.
I think he's almost 60. Asians.
That's what we got, man. That's what we got.
But yeah, Rudy, he's such a good guy, very strong Christian, unapologetic, and every morning, Mav, him, Chris, and I, Aaron, one of the personal trainers there, I mean, we all just sit there and talk. It's great.
Mm.
But to see this, yearning, and it's weird how it's not like we put a Craigslist ad out.
I'll tell you, I can tell you why it's happening.
Yes, tell me, Eric.
Is any time that you have a fire that starts to heat things up, all the cream comes to the top, man. Like, everything starts to come. So when the church is put into that wine press, and Christians are put into the wine press, those who are not Christians will get crushed and fall away, and they go back to, you can't even tell them apart from the world. You know what I'm saying? But the true believers, and that's sometimes why God says there's a purification of the church.
Mm.
Churches are built on the blood of the saints. And so whenever there's persecution, whenever there's hard times, whenever things are not going the way where it's just so easy, I don't need God, I'll just buy my way out, or I'll just go on vacation or do whatever, I'll just do something mindless to get my mind off of it. When it comes to a point where it's like we have no more excuses left, no more distractions left, that's when the Christians have to make a decision. And that's where you start to see Christians start banding together and starting to become more bold. And it comes from hard times and persecution, as much as we hate it. But I'm at the point now where I'm like, man, if somebody says something mean to me about being a believer, keep it coming, because it's literally building riches in heaven. And
it
makes me more excited sometimes.
Honestly, it doesn't even affect I don't even get angry.
Yeah.
I don't even want to get into a debate or anything. Yeah. Like, it literally deflects completely off of me.
I was telling you today, I was like, I was thinking about all this stuff, and I was like, man, it started getting me angry, and I was like, well, what do I do about it? Oh, that's right, nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah.
I give it up to God.
Yeah.
And he's going to take care of it, We just keep doing our thing. I do what he wants me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. It's as simple as that.
Well, I mean, if your hope is in the government system to save you,
you're going to be disappointed.
I'd be terrified right now. Yeah, no, I'd be terrified.
They're passing bills, obviously, to come completely after you from every aspect.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they are blatantly attacking you. They are attacking you spiritually, physically, every bit of it.
Yeah. Well, we got to remember, that's why it's like when I say to especially guys in our industry and in our community, where we have a lot of people that say, like, get riled up. I was one of them, you know, like, oh man, when is this going to end? You know, when do we say enough? And it's like, hold on, homie. It's not your fight. This government system belongs to Satan and the world. Mm-hmm. Our kingdom is higher than this. And we also have a moral standard that we follow that belongs to the King of Kings. And so that takes just, for me, I know it takes a lot of pressure off my shoulders about, like, man, like, my responsibility right now, it's like, I can prepare all I want and I can do all these things, but am I preparing my family? Am I witnessing to my family? Am I witnessing to my children? And am I mentoring my wife and making sure that we are all together in the Word as a family, and or doing things like, are there family members that I know that aren't Christians? Have I been witnessing to them? You know, like, and I start asking myself these questions. About like thinking about changing up my priority list about what I'm wasting my time on in terms of worrying about those things. And it's like when you don't worry about it and you just realize that you are a citizen of the kingdom of heaven and a prince, it takes so much stress off your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of, yeah. It's so we talked earlier, Roy and I had talked earlier about demons. And one of the things that was interesting to myself and Roy, we were reading in Matthew, and
we talked about this Matthew 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
Matthew 8. Did we talk to you about this, Roy?
No.
We talked.
Yeah, Matthew 8.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit last week.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we did.
Go.
We did. Yes.
Go.
So.
Yeah, when Jesus says "go" to the demons, mm-hmm. So he's cast out the demons. And then he
says,
with one word, and they go. Well, they ask.
Where do they ask to go?
They ask to go to the pigs that they hear.
Yeah.
And then they go to the pigs, and then they take possession, and the pigs go to the water.
So, off the cliff, yeah.
So that's what Roy and I, we talked about. I was like, why did they do that? Why bother going into pigs, and why bother immediately killing them, right? And so something I was reading, and I was talking about this with Roy the other day, I found out the answer, because Jesus literally says it in, I believe it's the following chapter.
It's 12. No, it's in chapter 12.
Okay, here we go. All right, so here we go. Yeah, you're right.
12,
the sign of Jonah.
12, 20,
chapter 12, verse 43.
43?
So this is Jesus talking now, and he's talking to some of the Pharisees and teachers of the law, mm-hmm. right? And he says in verse 43, when an impure spirit comes out of a person, it goes through arid places seeking rest and does not find it. Other translations will say, like, what's your translation say? So verse 43.
Was it 12?
12, verse 34. Yeah, chapter 12, verse 43.
43. I'm in Mark. That's the reason.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the heck is going
on? So I'm curious to see what his says.
Can't read the difference between Mark and Matthew.
But Jesus is giving some very interesting specific characteristics about demonic spirits, which demonic spirits, I believe, are what we can talk about that next, about what we think they are.
So that's NIV, right?
Yeah.
So NIV, this is New English Translation. So
yeah, NLT.
NET.
Okay.
That's NET. So 43, right?
Yep.
When an unclean spirit goes out of a person, it passes through waterless places.
I love that. Okay.
Looking for rest, but does not find it.
Mm-hmm.
Then it says, I will return to the house I left. When it arrives, it finds the house unoccupied, swept clean, and put in order. Or it says, when I go back to the person I was just possessing. And it says that then it goes and takes with it seven other spirits more wicked than itself, and they go in and they live in there, in the person. And the final condition of that person is worse than the first. That is how it will be with this wicked generation. Can you finish reading the whole thing of your translation? So yours is...
So it's actually pretty much the same. Only a couple of words are different. So yeah. It's really the waterless in the first part. So then it says, I will return to the home I left. When it returns, it finds the house empty, swept clean, and put in order. Then it goes and brings with the seven other spirits more evil than itself, and they go in and live in there. So the last state of that person is worse than the first. It will be that way for this evil generation as well.
So here's what's crazy is... I love how yours says a waterless area. So when demons are not possessing a body, according to Jesus, demons, when they're not possessing a body and they are not near water, they are literally tormented when they cannot be inside of a body. So they're constantly wandering. And what did the demons ask Jesus when they were getting raised? Have you come to torment us before our time. Yes. So now they're scared of being cast out and out of a body because they always are seeking a body to take host of. And they go into pigs, which is not a body that they normally do, but Jesus gives them permission to go into the pigs. What I think is interesting that demons have to receive permission to go into animals, right? So that tells us also something else is that animals are honestly not a normal thing that they are possessed by, right? So demon goes into the animals, and it goes where? It goes straight into the water. Why? Because demons and water, you know, where Leviathan comes out of the ocean, the dragon comes from the sea, the beast will come from the sea in Revelation. So demons and their connection with the ocean or water is really interesting. Because what is, when the earth is, in Genesis, what is the earth before God, when God's just hovering over it, it's hovering over the waters.
And then the waters.
Isn't that crazy, dude? So we learn some of these crazy things that are characteristics about demons, but that's why they're always seeking to possess. And when they get cast out, the reason they find seven more demons that are more wicked than themselves is because they don't want to be cast back out again, right? It's always better to go do things with a crowd. So when you talk about this wicked generation, Jesus is talking about that as we progress throughout time, the next generations, these
worse and worse,
like things will constantly happen. So you talk about these people who look like they're just crazy. And it's like a lot of people have this preconceived notion that demon possession is like, the scary movie where it's like they're ripping themselves off and levitating and all that stuff. And it's like, no, dude, like there can be. I've had experiences with it where not demon possession, but experience with other people who had spirits attached in them. And
so you get the same from generational curses.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you just feel something's off. You like they come into a room and you're just like, something feels off about that person. And so this shows that demons are constantly looking to possess because when they are not in a body, they are possessed or they are tormented, and also they strive to go near water or go into water. One of the things that I was listening to Dr. Heiser about was, what are demons specifically? Besides evil spirits, like where do they come from?
I thought they were the Nephilim.
Okay, elaborate.
Like they're the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim?
Yeah. So,
or however,
you're correct.
However that's worded.
So that's what I believe. And actually, it doesn't say, and this is when I was listening to Dr. Heiser, and actually, if you guys haven't, go check out the Naked Bible podcast. It's on Spotify. But he breaks down, according to extra biblical text outside of the Bible, but there's nowhere in the Bible that it says that angels, a third of the angels fell to earth and became demons. Like, right. It doesn't say that. Now, he's talking about a third of the stars were swept out of the sky in the book of Revelation, but that is not in reference to angels. What we see is that after Adam and Eve were made and the fall of man, then we have a time where there's a lot of sons of God that go to Mount Hermon and they want to become kings or lords over the people, right? and they have sex with women and end up creating the Nephilim, and the Nephilim create the giants, the race of giants. Now, what we have there is an abomination. It was something that was never supposed to happen. A spirit being and a physical being coming together from two different dimensions, two different worlds, and creating something that was not of God. And so what happens when that being, that physical hybrid being, dies, well, the spirit is still there. And that spirit, which is unnatural, roams. One of the crazy things I saw that was interesting also was, I used to watch a lot of paranormal stuff I used to follow that, and I don't recommend that to anybody. You know, you're kind of meddling in things that you shouldn't be meddling in. And when you start looking for things,
careful what you bring into your house.
Yes. It's a gateway. So, but one of the things that I did notice is that a lot of these videos I'd be watching where people are capturing entities on TikTok Live and all this stuff. One, the activity I saw from 2020 onward, before that, when I followed it, it was like, oh, I saw an orb, or I saw a slight apparition or something. It was nothing ever like crazy. And then after 2020, it was like the most shocking things. Like, I'm seeing full shadow beings in the video. Like, you can see it plain as day. It's like right there. Like, or you see like enough detail to see hair, like stuff like that, that we're picking up in these videos. One of the common themes, though, is that people would always say that the beings were extremely tall, almost like they were super tall, mm-hmm. where they had to like bend over, like their heads were very stretched, but like a giant, mm-hmm. almost like the size of what they used to be when they were there. So like, but what's crazy is what I took away from that and seeing, I used to follow the same channel, and the videos that he would collect off the internet were getting more and more and more terrifying in terms of just like the stuff they were capturing was shocking. And what that told to me in the back of my mind was the evil forces that are coming, they are ramping up their operations. They are becoming more bold and they are moving their armies. Like if you move an army, like mm-hmm. in Ukraine, right? The Russians are moving towards a certain area. You can usually see evidences of that groups that armies travel. Like you see foot tracks.
Like an influx of the numbers going up of entry into a country's border.
You see a ton of that, right? Okay. You see the fences being knocked down. You see trash. You see all kinds of stuff. But that happens when there's a large group, if there's a lot of movement or something. So when you have the armies of darkness that are moving, it seems like every empty house, there's a demon that they catch inside of it on camera. There's always, it's never used to be that way.
What is your take? So the disembodied spirits of Nephilim, do you think that in the realm of hell, mm. you know, that there are other beings that the untrained or the uninformed would also call demons, but aren't quite like that, like the disembodied spirit of the Nephilim?
Mm-hmm.
What would you call those? So I wonder, because it's a lot of the like, not to get into like demonology here, but a lot of the descriptors of certain like princes of hell or demon or like higher named, you know, or even some possessions where the demon may be named. A lot of the descriptors that come are that of when we get into back with them doing like the early CRISPR, mm. you know, the pre-flood.
Yeah.
Sounds a lot like the experiments they might have been doing there,
because
certain they have animal parts.
Yeah.
Chicken heads, you know, or rooster heads, and then the tail of a scorpion, things like that.
Mm.
So I just wonder if it's quite like Nephilim, you know, spirits of the Nephilim of the giants, but some of those spirits of the abominations they were making.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that, like, I think that there was a lot of stuff that we don't know pre-flood, but what we do know is that we have evidences of things that God was saying to the Israelites at the time of the Old Testament, saying, hey, like, you know, certain areas that were like giant areas and giant nations, they'd be like, kill everything. Yeah. To include the animals, kill everything. Like, almost like a purge, like, just clean everything. Everything is defiled, right? And so if the land is defiled, the animals are defiled, the people are defiled, you had to assume that there was some sort of mutation or thing that was happening that was an abomination that was not of God, right? And so they were given the commandment to erase that. I think that, I mean, the biggest thing I think about what Genesis 6 and the Nephilim and understanding what these demons are is just knowing your enemy. I think that's such an important thing that we have to know who our enemy is, and then also that helps us to understand our mission statement from a battle, like a battlefield perspective. Knowing the characteristics of the enemy, knowing what our purpose is and our objective, right? Mm-hmm. That's why when we are called to wage spiritual warfare, it's not to go out and cast demons, it's to go out and save the lost, you know, by preaching and being obedient, and then defending against attacks when we're doing that. It, to me, it almost reminds me of that tank, you know, like all you're doing, go get those guys and then bring them right back. You're not going on assault. They're going to be shooting all kinds of stuff at you. Go grab them and bring them back. That's your job. And so that's what I feel like that we are called to do, is to go out and to reach those who are lost and then defend from all of the arrows and attacks that are going to happen when we're trying to pull them out of the darkness, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that goes back to, though, understanding your enemy. And then also, for me, I've been breaking, not, I think there's a really dangerous thing. I'm not breaking or deconstructing my faith. That's different. I'm trying to separate church traditions that I've grown up that are not biblical to what is biblical, right? You know, for example, I never knew what the purpose of baptism was. I was just like, oh, it's just something you do. You can't be saved if you're not baptized. And it's like, no, I don't think that's the case. But what baptism does is it is a formal ceremony to show that now I am putting on the uniform of the kingdom of heaven. I am making a formal statement.
Formal declaration.
Whenever Jesus went to start his ministry, was the first thing he did. Got baptized as a symbol to show I am beginning my ministry, which shows I am now beginning the fight, right? So it's not something that's required, just like circumcision, but it is another step of your maturity and your faith to show that you are essentially accepting accountability.
Well, if it's not baptism, then how are we saved, Eric? What, through grace and grace alone?
Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to say?
Listen, you're going to have to work on that. Yeah. Yeah. There is no works, but I think that's something where we have to clean all these things up in terms of understanding of the Bible, because there are so many preconceived notions from non-believers that are going to ask you, it's like, well, I have to get, you know, do all these things and all these extra things. And it's like, no. Like, so there's a lot of confusion about Christianity and what it entails. And I think that,
Comes from just, Jesus says it himself, as far, you can't work it.
Amen.
You can't work it.
Yeah.
And it's in here.
Yeah.
The truth is in here.
Yeah.
So you have to read the truth.
Yeah. There is an action. Yeah. There is only one action that you have to do. And that one action is when God is out knocking on the door of your heart, you have to answer the door.
And you can't turn it away.
You can't keep it closed or turn it away. That is the only action required of you. You open the door. When you open the door in your life to him, he'll do the rest. And part of that also includes that we have this understanding that, like, you know, the world tells us that you are the best person, like you're the coolest guy, you can do it on your own, you don't need anybody else, you can make your dreams come true, all this stuff. I mean, think of all the motivational posts you see on Instagram that are like, man, I'm the tire. You know, it's like, but literally that's the opposite of what Christ says. I am fallen. I am a sinner. I am literally a terrible person because I try to do things on my own standard and I fall short. I think things that are evil. I have the same ability to buy toilet paper for all at the store and sell it for 10 times the price. I have the same qualities to do that because I'm a fallen human being, right? I have the ability to do all these sins. And so the difference is when we start judging people, it's like we put ourselves above them by thinking that we are not capable of that, when that is not the case.
We're gonna take the plank out of our own eye.
Correct.
Everything that we were talking about earlier, we're all capable of it.
Yes.
And the only thing that keeps you in check,
is realizing that you are a sinner and that you are fallen and you need God's help. You need God to do it. And so, there's so much reassurance in that because it takes the pressure off you. And this kind of leads me into Matthew chapter 13, which I kind of I wanted to read to you guys. But it's about the parable of the sower. And this talks about the different types of, well, I'll just go ahead and read it. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the lake. Such large crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat in it, while all the people stood on the shore. Then he told them many things in parables, saying, a farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places, where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched, and they withered away because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop, 160 or 30 times what was sown. Whoever has ears, let him hear. So my question is what do you guys think? The first one we hear about is a farmer who sows his seed. As he's scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up.
Mm-hmm.
What is your thought on that? About what type of person are we, is he describing? Good talk.
No, I mean, as Christians,
I think it's
all we can do is plant the seed.
Mm.
Yep.
Jesus waters it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some are going to be destined to be taken away.
Yeah.
You know, some are not going to fall in fertile soil. There's predators out there.
Yeah. There are people that will not even accept it. Like it won't Never. Even sprout.
Correct. But I think yet you have, and you know, obviously we have every sign, every time you read a Bible verse, we go completely quiet. it's like when you're in school,
yeah,
and your teacher reads something to you and then they stop and they're like, what do you think
about what
yeah.
Jesus. Okay, you can't use that every time.
God is great. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. God is great. Oh, I think it takes a minute just for your brain to process exactly what you just said there. I think, you know, being persistent in planting that seed though.
Mm.
And I don't know. For me, and you know, a testament to, you know, you were there with you know, when we went to Georgia and stuff like that, and you know, and I shared some of the upleading to, you know, how often, you know, my friend Perry, mm-hmm. passed away, family friend, yeah. how persistent he was in planting that seed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Roy was a seed that got taken by the birds a couple times, but you know what those yeah. birds do after they eat those seeds?
Yeah.
They digest them,
yeah,
and they poop them out, yeah. and then somebody goes and collects them,
yeah,
and plants them again.
Plants them again, and that's it. So.
I think the farmer is the one who is the Christian that is consistently throwing the seeds out. It doesn't yep. say he
spread
goes over. He doesn't spread it in the same. He doesn't spread it once over one spot.
Just no.
good one. He keeps going over the same spot, and eventually some of those seeds fall Correct. Into the soil.
That's what I'm saying with yeah. being persistent and,
yeah.
and understanding that just, you know, you plant that seed one time and you're completely ignored, and it's like, oh, I'm not going back to that spot anymore.
Just keep doing it.
Because it didn't grow.
Right.
That's your what they're saying, you know, what I see from it is continue until the crop grows and continue to feed it, continue to nurture it, continue to, you know, find different ways to plant the seed.
Mm.
So, and you know, and I've witnessed that, like I said, I witnessed it. How many times that, man, Perry would come to me and just come up with different ways of planting the seed, just so tactical about it.
Yeah.
It's and I didn't even realize it, and now I just think back and I say, yeah, I could sit here and I can almost feel like I'm sitting in the room with him asking me every single time, and that seed that he's planting over and over and over. And at that particular point in time, I'm like, you know, here it is, my friend's just wanting me to come hang out with him or you know, go teach some firearm instruction to a bunch of guys or mm-hmm. whatever it may be, or hey, come hunting with me or hey, whatever. Just so never once was it that blatant, like, hey, man, you need to come with me so we can sit down and read this Bible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he just came at it from so many different directions. And the more I just think about it, how amazing and how the treasures that he has in heaven right now.
Mm.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. How big his mansion is.
Dude.
And it's a shame that it wasn't until after he was gone.
Yeah.
But I think it makes it even.
Well, I think honestly, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yes,
it does.
He can
feel
see it.
It does feel sweeter. It feels
because especially when you realized it, like yeah. when it all clicked for you.
Yeah,
it was just like now I see.
Yeah. Now I see.
Mm.
It is amazing.
So. Yeah.
Well, so we have the second one is some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil.
Mm-hmm.
It sprang up quickly. Did not have much or
didn't have good roots, yeah.
Did not have much soil, so it sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came, the plants were scorched and they withered away because they had no root. I mean, I think that's a lot of people, you mm-hmm. know, a lot of people they hear it. And this is why I'm always,
oh, that sounds great. I'm gonna change my whole life,
yeah. Or they're like, yeah, I'm gonna accept this prayer, I'm gonna say this prayer at church. And then before you know it, they like they get super emotional, excited because something happens and everybody's singing together and you're like, man, this is great. And then they go, they leave, and it's like a week later, it's like back to.
Well, the sun coming out is a perfect example.
Yeah.
Harsh conditions come and then they wither up
mm-hmm.
because
yeah.
they don't have that. It's like things get hard and it's like, oh.
And yeah. I think it goes back to like what we were talking about earlier. You know, the certain things that are vocabulary that you add in, it's like, you know, you hear people constantly all the time, and including myself, I'm guilty of it, and I'm trying to erase it from, I'm working to, you know, stay diligent and in my devotions to erase these things. But like where you'll hear people, like they'll say, I know this sounds weird, I don't want to sound crazy, you know, I don't want to sound like
you're prefacing.
Yes. That I'm about
the gospel or whatever,
yes,
yeah.
Prefacing the gospel with, I don't want to sound crazy.
I know that sounds crazy, but you know, yes. Jesus died for you.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I mean. It's like you hear that often,
mm-hmm.
Or you know, this sounds crazy. Like telling the story. If I was to tell the story of, you know, our Georgia trip, Seth, and I was to start that story off, and I was, you know, this is going to sound crazy, and it's going to sound weird, and it's almost going to sound unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you know what you're going to get? You're going to get, you're right, that did sound weird.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Where you know, that's what happened. This yeah. is what, this is exactly what happened. Mm. This is an understanding, quit questioning the yeah. presence of Jesus.
My goal is to sound like Paul when I speak.
Yes.
Because Paul wasn't like, my dear brothers, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I'm in jail right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. And I think that's where, you know, that comes from. And stop questioning that double-mindedness.
Mm.
You should just be like Ringo Starr, and from now on, replace, I know this is going to sound crazy, with beloved.
Yeah. Beloved.
Yeah. Beloved. Beloved. And then just start
yeah.
speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, so the next one is my favorite. Not the X's, not my favorite. Other seed.
Let me caveat on that.
Other seed.
Segway.
Yeah.
Segway.
Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. So.
Christians not in a good, new Christians not yeah. in good environments.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they get, yeah, that's what's like, I think that's why it's so important to have, if
we
you're.
Read that one again real quick?
So it says.
I think that one is super important because, you know, for those that are out there that are you're listening to us and you're kind of, you know, in doubt or, you know, questioning and, you know, maybe you had, go ahead, read it.
So other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. I think that for me, the way that I see that is it's a believer who is a brand new believer that God is growing in their life, but they have friends that they have always had or mm-hmm. family members they're always around that are not believers that choke it out of them.
Mm-hmm.
It causes that to go out. And that's why I think that fellowship with other believers, like mm-hmm. you were talking about in the gym, is so important because it helps that keep that accountability, but it helps also as for us as Christians who are mature in our faith to find those guys and gals and mentor them and be like, mm-hmm. hey, no, like hold them up by their arms. You know, they're growing. That's why when they talk about, you know, God talks about Christians in terms of a lifespan and analogy of how it looks. It's like you're born and then you're a baby Christian, then you're a teenage Christian, then you're a full adult Christian, like you're mature. Like, and so when we have that brand new shoot, but the thorns come in, they just choke it out. It's people who have those toxic people in their lives that are not believers, and they're not witnessing to them. And those people are just influencing them to go back into the world.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this, but there's a time I can remember where if you were in public, you'd be like, "Hey, I want to talk to you about Jesus."
Yeah.
It was almost like people would look around, like they were going to tell a racist joke or something, and I'm like, "Why are we whispering?"
Yeah.
And now I'm happy to see more just people unapologetically, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm happy to be I'm happy to be like, it feels so, I don't know. It feels so relieving and so much stress and so much weight off your back to not be a closet Christian, to not be the one hiding away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that also is relating to that, that there's, you know, within the Christian community, that there is sometimes the toxic side of it.
Yeah.
You know, so much that people get pushed out and they get choked out within their own church,
mm-hmm.
by a judgmental church.
Dude, you ever listen to that band Under Oath?
Yeah.
It was a metal band.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they were actually at Warped Tour, and this it's a sad story. But the singer of Under Oath, they were a Christian metal band. Like
For
their first album, they're a Christian metal band.
It was like a demo album. But
it was a good one. Like, it caught on. They got invited out to Vans Warped Tour. And the singer actually ended up doing drugs at the Vans Warped Tour. And then he came back to his church, and he was like, felt bad and wanted to figure out how to, you know, remedy this and fix this. And essentially
looking
for help, and the church pushed him out, dude.
Ostracized
him, and his band ostracized him. And then now he has his own band, and he is like, is not a Christian. Like, he has a war waged against Christians. Like, he absolutely hates Christians because of how they treated him. They pushed him out instead of helping him when he went for help. And that's what you're talking about, that toxic behavior, that judgmental behavior. It's like, literally, those thorns choked him out, you know what I'm saying, to where he left the faith, and not only left it, but now is like, I hate other people who are Christians because this is how you are.
And understand the sin of judging is probably the most difficult sin to deal with.
Well, I mean, God says he will judge you by the measure that you judge others.
Yeah.
So whatever standard you hold for people, just understand that's going to happen to you. So if you're a hard
judge, that's why I love everybody I give everybody the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, anybody want to know why I'm so nice? That's why, right there.
But I was saying, you know, it is difficult. You find yourself just getting naturally trapped up into it, and especially in our community, a community full of alphas.
Yeah.
Yep. That's why every night when I lay my head down and I pray, I'm like, "Hey, Jesus, all those things I said today, I was just kidding. Yeah, I was just joshing."
And speaking of all the alphas, that's my target. Yeah. All alphas.
All alphas.
All alphas.
Not mine lately.
No. We're all on a journey.
Mine's more Charlie's.
Yeah.
Well. I've been visiting Charlie a lot lately.
You guys have been hitting the targets?
Yeah. So the last one is the Christian that I'm like, that I strive to be and what I want to be.
This is your favorite.
That's right. Still, other seed fell on good soil. And here's the key phrase, where it produced a crop, a crop was sown. Whoever has ears. Okay, excuse me. Lord have mercy. Still, other seed fell on good soil where it produced a crop, 100, 60, or 30 times what was sown. So that is the key. The good crop creates more believers. Mm-hmm. It creates new farmers to spread the seed. And so that is something that I think right now, for the first time in my life, I'll be honest, like the first time in my life, you know, knowing and growing up in the church and all this stuff and being a Christian, quote unquote, and not really a true believer, in my opinion, just knowing of God and being religious. But this is the first time in my life this year that I've been bold in my faith to talk about it like I am. I've never had that before.
Discipleship is a big thing. that I think a lot of the churches don't hit on, and it's what Jesus calls us to do.
Yes.
And if you're not holding yourself to that standard and holding yourself accountable to that, a lot of this doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you put on your big boy pants and do what God asks you, calls you to do, you're like, oh, okay, this makes sense. I've got a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, even when there is that parable of God, or Jesus was telling about the servants that the master gave him a talent of gold, and one servant took the talent of gold, and he turned and made 100 talents a profit, and another one went and did, you know, mm-hmm. Only 50 talents, but... And then the last one, or the one before the last one, he only did one. He got a talent of gold, and he produced another talent of gold, so he had two talents. Every single one of those servants, God says, well done, good and faithful servant, because you took what God gave you, and you at least turned it, and you did something with it. But the man who took the talent and buried it and did nothing with it, he said, you a wicked servant, get out of here.
I thought it was going
to
grow.
Yeah, but he just wanted to save it, didn't want to have it for anybody else. And so the key is, it doesn't matter how many people God uses you to grow his seeds. The key is whether you plant a few seeds or a million seeds. Mm-hmm. If you're being obedient to what God is saying and you're talking about it, and you're being bold and not a closet Christian, God will reward you,
mm-hmm.
you know? But anyways, final thoughts, guys.
Go ahead, Seth.
What do you think, 77 grain or 308 for a demon?
Aerate a demon?
Yeah, a spiritual being.
Do I have multiple targets or just one?
They are many.
Yeah.
What am I?
They are legion.
What am I sending 308 out of?
A high point.
Are we just talking about? If we're just talking just around, I mean.
Use your imagination.
Yeah, use my imagination. If I can have an M110 or a large platform AR that can send the rounds reliably, not malfunction on me.
Keyword, reliable.
I'm using a 22 where the bullets are anointed with holy oil.
I will take the 308.
Okay.
All day, so bring the pain.
I do 77. Yeah. And I just send them fast.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them fast.
Yep. Yeah. But that's the thing. I got to have a reliable rifle.
Yeah.
There ain't too many of those in existence.
When it comes to 308s.
When it comes to 308 and a semi-auto.
Yeah.
So, but if I did have it, I will definitely take that. So,
good final thoughts.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. I would say, just as always, guys, I mean, to continue to be bold.
Mm-hmm.
Continue to be out front, because there's someone there that will listen. That's all there is to it. Be persistent. That someone will listen. Someone will want more knowledge. Somebody will seek to you, and be bold, and also understand if you don't know, that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's okay. Like that's I don't know all of this. Like that's why.
Yeah. If you don't know, ask questions. Reach out to somebody. Correct. If you do know, reach out to somebody and teach them.
And teach them.
You know? Reach out to somebody and be there for them.
Yeah.
Be that person.
This is not to be a gatekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. This knowledge. So if you have the knowledge, obviously pass that knowledge on. And obviously if you're curious and you're seeking that knowledge, or you just don't know and you have questions, like be bold and ask them.
Yep. Mm.
If something is heavy on your heart, don't self-isolate. Don't just hold it in and think that you can handle it, because I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to tell you that you can't handle it.
Mm.
Like it will eat at you. It'll eat at you. And that self-isolating is a vulnerability And I know a lot of the stuff that we talk about is heavy, and we have made it part to that we want to dive into every aspect of the Bible, and we want to learn it all. We're not cherry picking, we don't want to. It's the same thing when we go to shooting. We don't cherry pick just the certain things that we want to do. Mm-hmm. We want to work on all aspects of shooting. Mm-hmm. We want to be good with a pistol. We want to be good with a bolt gun. We want to be good with a long gun. We want to be good with everything.
Yeah.
So we don't cherry pick certain things that we do there, and I'm not going to cherry pick in the Bible at the same time. So some of the stuff we talk about is heavy, and some of the time it's like, man, I don't know about that.
Mm.
I don't know about that. That's where you have to ask questions.
Yeah.
You have to ask questions and understand that if something's weighing heavy on you, that self-isolating, you will come to realize that is as it continues to be your burden, and that weight, it'll continue to stack that weight that you're carrying on your back over and over and over.
Mm.
That is a spiritual attack. That is the devil himself doing work on you. That is continuing to stack.
To keep you away from Christ.
To keep you away from Christ. And he's putting more weight on your back as you try to climb that hill. Mm. As you try to climb that mountain, he's putting another pound on you. And it starts out very small. It starts out in ounces. And it continues to become pounds and pounds. And next thing you know, you got a 200-pound rucksack on your back, and you're trying to climb Mount Everest.
Mm.
So, be bold. Don't self-isolate. Find someone to talk to. Mm-hmm. Find someone
or a group. I mean, honestly, for our viewers out there, it's one of the things that I hope and pray for almost every night for you guys, is that you're able, with your friends or your group, or even maybe your coworkers, that you guys get to have the same conversation we get to have.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of this stuff we talk about this off camera. This is our everyday. So for us, we're very blessed that we get to have these conversations and talk about these things. And then we bring it to you guys through this podcast format. And I really do pray that you guys have some type of group, or whether it's a friend group or whatever social group you guys have, and are able to have these same conversations, mm-hmm. To have the conversations about, whether it's political or just what's going on in the world or whatever it is. And also the spiritual, that talking about God, talking about your walk and your relationship with God, your journey, keeping everyone accountable. That's how we grow, not only as individuals, but as a community. Once we grow in that, that's the only way we're ever going to be able to make good change.
Yep. Mm. It's the only change. It's the only way we make change.
Yeah.
Like, we can picket, we can stand and protest, we can do everything.
Yeah.
But this is the only way that we're going to make change.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on.
Correct.
Doesn't matter what political party you have or what your ideals are. If you're a national, like, you're a patriot and you stand for the Constitution, or you want a communist government. At the end of the day, we're all fallen and we need the Lord. And for those who are believers, just remember, don't get tied up into the things of this world, into the fight of this world, and think that it is your fight to be involved in all of that type of stuff and lose focus of the kingdom of heaven. The fight is, like Jesus says, is not of flesh and blood, but it's against principalities and darkness. And so make sure that you're, one, training yourself by reading the Bible and praying, and then leading your family in doing that, and mentoring your children. That's something that I'm working on now. I'm working on playing catch up because I did not mentor my children. I was not mentoring or being a good spiritual husband to my wife. And so now I'm playing catch up on trying to educate them on the Word, and build these habits of praying with them before bed, and not just praying at, okay, hey, go pray for dinner. Like, I'm actually trying to do that and play catch up. And it's been a really good thing. It's a challenge. But that is how I train myself, my family, my brothers in Christ to be eternal assets. And not just worry about the temporary things of this world. 'Cause we could prep all you want, and you could, God could say, it's time for you to come home, and you die in your sleep and you go to heaven, like, or go to wherever you're going. But, like, it can be gone tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Everything can be gone tomorrow. You could die in a car. I could die in a car crash tomorrow. Like, something could happen.
You could focus on just being an asset, or you could focus on being what?
An eternal asset. Yeah. So, guys, thank you so much for checking out another Hatchet Cast episode. If you got something out of this video, or you know that there's someone in your life or your family that could use prayer or would benefit by listening to the podcast, please share this video with them, whether it's on Spotify or on YouTube. Go check out our main Hatchet Cast channel to go check out gun content. I will tell you, We have been adding Christian topics at the end of those two. So, yeah, just wanted to let you guys know about that. And if you are hurting out there, if you are dealing with it, if you are self-isolating, like Roy was talking about earlier, please reach out to us, whether it's through its comment or DM or directly get a hold of us. We'd love to talk to you, pray for you. And if you're not a believer and you're interested in the truth and having stress taken off your life and taking that rucksack off and setting down before the cross and giving it to Jesus, let us know. We'll send you a Bible. So, guys, we love all of you. May God bless you. Train to be the eternal asset. And we'll see you on the next one.